This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehia Suhib in Washington. Here's what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
This is not going to be negotiated. It's going to be something that's pretty ugly, and it's going to go for a while.
That was David DeRoche, associate professor at the U.S. National Defense University, on the possibility that the Israel-Hamas conflict could be dragging on for a while. Details coming up. Also, the U.S. is suspending most aid to Niger, and Liberians went to the polls today for presidential and legislative elections. These stories and more on Africa News Tonight. First, our top story. Liberians packed voting centers across the country to vote for a president and legislators. Dennis Nipson has more from Monrovia.
Liberians have gathered at polling stations nationwide to vote in today's general elections. The process has been peaceful with members of the joint security spread along polling centers. There have been scattered violence during the campaign. However, and at least three people died in clashes among supporters of different candidates. Today, Monrovia streets are calm and most of those seen out are either making their way to vote or have already voted. Some voters waiting at polling stations told VOA they arrived at the voting precincts as early as 3 a.m., but the process is slow. Several voters spoke to VOA about how the process has been going.
My name is Michael K. I am a student as well, a businessman. The process has been a little bit slow, and there are some delays within the process. The night workers were very slow, and they had one police officer here at the time was helping, and the tension was too much. But then later on, few officers came to help the process. And then even we that came to vote tried to help because people were jumping from line to line. And then even in this area, the other area that people were going there paying money to enter from that side, which of course people were not supposed to enter from that space, and we had to raise our concern before the officers go there to guard the area. And now I think, as you can see, it is better under control than when we came here this morning.
My name is Aflomo, a business person. And fine, we vote for our heart. For me, I enjoy my voting. The way I cash my vote, I enjoy it. It was easy. For me, it's easy because they told me I went soon and cash my vote soon.
I'm Frederick Moloba. I'm a vehicle technician in Wewelaf Mohef, and I came to exercise my right today here. Oh, it was so easy for me because I knew where to go and I knew what to do. I seen the process like very fair for now. For whatsoever I saw in there, the process is fair. So it was easy for me. I would just ask questions and I answer the question and we're done.
There are complaints from the various polling centers about how slowly the long lines of waiting voters are being managed. President George Weah is seeking the second six-year term. Former Vice President Joseph Boakai of the United Party is seen as his top challenger among the 19 other candidates. Weah beat Boakai in a runoff in the 2017 election. Around 2.4 million people are registered to vote in the country, which still bears the scars of two civil wars between 1989 and 2023 and the Ebola epidemic between 2013 and 2016. Weah says a second term will allow him to expand his programs to build roads and other infrastructure, such as schools. Boakai and other critics, however, say Weah has not done enough to fight corruption and fulfill his pledges to improve livelihoods. The National Elections Commission says all results will be released within 15 days. For VOA, I'm Denise Nipson in Monrovia, Liberia.
The International Monetary Fund, IMF, and World Bank are holding annual meetings in Marrakesh, Morocco. It's the first time in 50 years the two global lenders have held their meeting in Africa, and it comes as they face growing criticism that poorer nations are underrepresented at the two institutions. Both institutions have recently said they plan to give Africa additional seats on their executive boards. These annual meetings bring together policymakers, academics, civil society, and economic experts to tackle world economic and development issues. For more perspective, Polindiho via Skype spoke to Ghazi Ben Ahmed, an economist and founder of Mediterranean Development Initiative, a Tunis-based think tank.
These meetings happening in Marrakesh in Morocco are very timely. It's very symbolic, I think, after what they've been through, this tremendous earthquake that had several casualties and is putting an additional strain on the Moroccan economy.
How significant are these meetings, especially there's been a lot of criticism from African leaders are saying that they are not part of the conversation. Do these meetings being held in Morocco make any difference?
IMF, World Bank has changed the way they are tackling problems in our region or in the south. There is a political willingness to give more comfort for countries in the south, and more initiative and more like having this discussion equal to equal.
These countries have been arguing that whenever they get loans from these institutions, especially the IMF, the interest rates are so high compared to developing nations. So their argument has always been something that is relatively fair to all. Is this something that can be accomplished in these meetings taking place in Morocco?
Well, you know, that's a very good point, Paul, because as you know, the interest rate translate the risk of the country. Let me give you an example about Tunisia. Tunisia is in dire need of money, international financial help. So they went to Afreximbank. And the interest rate was 10.24%, which is pretty much high. I don't think that that IMF interest rate is the problem. The problem is the willingness, the political will to implement reforms.
As an economist, what needs to be done? How can these African countries that are advocating for their voices to be heard or equal opportunity or being seated at the table where these decisions are made?
This is a very good question. I'm afraid I don't have a magic answer to that. Let me tell you that I've been for a long time advocating for free trade and regional integration in Africa. We have a great opportunity with the African Continental Free Trade Agreement that could allow African countries to look for additional trade instead of additional financial aid. All the efforts must be made towards facilitating trade and facilitating having or how to exploit trade opportunities within Africa or with other major partners.
There are people who have suggested, for example, that having these meetings on the African continent is a great idea. But does it translate to something tangible for the ordinary folks in sub-Saharan Africa, in North Africa?
I don't believe so. I think that this is more symbolic than anything else. It will be useful to put the spotlight on Moroccan issues and Moroccan problems following the earthquake, which is good. But I don't think that it is a panacea. It will solve African countries' problems. It is more, it's deeper than that.
Ghazi Ben Ahmed, an economist and founder of Mediterranean Development Initiative, a Tunis-based think tank, spoke to VOA's Polindiho. Just a short time ago, the U.S. State Department said Washington has concluded that the Niger military's ouster of President Mohamed Bazoum in July was a coup d'etat. As a result, the U.S. will suspend most aid to Niger, including the Millennium Challenge Corporation's preparatory funding for its $302 million Niger Regional Transportation Compact. Military aid also will be suspended. The U.S. formerly worked closely with Niger on security issues in the region, which has seen a rise in militant violence. The State Department says Washington will continue sending humanitarian food and health assistance to the people of Niger. A few hours before the announcement, U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken spoke with Niger's President Bazoum. Washington called for the military to release Bazoum, his family, and detained government officials. Africa has seen several military takeovers in the past few years, including in Burkina Faso, Chad, Mali, and most recently, Gabon. Fighting continues for a fourth day today along the Gaza Strip, with Israel and Hamas bombarding each other's territory. Hundreds of rockets and missiles have been fired by both sides. Israel says more than 1,000 of its citizens have died in the fighting, and Palestinian officials in the Gaza Strip estimate more than 800 Palestinians have died. Israel has imposed a blockade on Gaza, cutting off food, electricity, and fuel supplies. The United Nations has condemned the blockade as a violation of international humanitarian law. I spoke earlier with Linda Gladstein on the line from Jerusalem. So can you tell us about conditions where you are?
Yes, well, I'm in Jerusalem, which has been relatively quiet today. But there is concern in Israel about a second front after a few rockets were fired from Lebanon, which is in northern, which is on Israel's northern border. Rockets and an anti-tank missile. Israel responded with artillery fire. And of course, that's in addition to the main fighting, which continued on the border between Israel and Gaza and southern Israel. Dozens of rockets were fired by Hamas at southern Israel. Two foreign workers were reported killed, and Israel continued its heavy bombardment of Gaza. The death toll on both sides is somewhere over 1,800 now in the fighting that started on Saturday with a Hamas incursion by hundreds of Hamas gunmen into Israel.
So Israel says it finds, what is this news about Israel finding bodies of 1,500 Hamas militants as it seals the border?
Yes, well, the Hamas militants, probably 1,500. There may still be a few who are hiding in southern Israel, those are all the people who were killed in shootouts. So those are all the gunmen who were killed in shootouts between Israeli forces and Hamas. And it just shows the extent of this attack, that 1,500 Hamas gunmen were able to infiltrate the border and carried out, I mean, basically massacres in various towns along southern Israel. In one kibbutz, a kibbutz is sort of a communal farming settlement, more than 100 bodies were found, and another 70 bodies of mostly civilians. So the total Israeli death toll is over 900, and many of them, over 250, were from a music rave. Young people celebrating, you know, a holiday, dancing, and whatever, who were killed. And there is also, Hamas continues to hold somewhere between 100 and 150 Israeli hostages.
And Linda, talk to us about the hostage situation there. There are Israeli hostages, and Hamas, according to some reports, is threatening to kill Israeli hostages every time Gaza Home is hit without prior warning.
Yes, that's correct. Up until now, we don't think it's happened, because Hamas would have broadcast that had they killed the hostages, but the Israeli bombardment has been continuing. But this is something that's really unprecedented for Israel. 150 of its citizens, including women and children, who are being held somewhere in Gaza. Israel has not given out a lot of information on it. However, the families of some of them did hold a press conference. Some of them are American citizens as well. And the American citizens called on the government to, the American government, to do whatever it could to get their relatives freed.
And now to Gaza. Talk to us about displacement. Gazans fleeing their homes. What is the number there?
So the latest number is probably somewhere about 140,000 Gazans have fled their homes. I actually got a message from a friend of mine in Gaza who said that she evacuated with her family to a school after they were afraid that their house would be bombed and they would be killed. Israel warned Gazans to flee. The problem is there's not really any way for them to leave Gaza. The only two places to leave are to Israel, which obviously is not going to happen, or to Egypt. And so far, Egypt has not been allowing Gazans in. So they have fled to UN schools and places like that in hopes that Israel will not bomb those targets. The problem is Gaza is very densely populated, and Israel says that Hamas has located its infrastructure in civilian areas. And so it's almost impossible to separate between Gaza and Hamas.
And anything else you would like to share with us, Linda?
No, I think just that there's a sense in Israel that, you know, that there's a good chance that Israel is preparing for a ground invasion, and they've called up more than 300,000 reservists. So, you know, if that happens, then this is going to be quite a long war.
Protracted, yes. Linda Granstein, you are in Jerusalem, right?
I'm in Jerusalem, yes.
Thank you for your input.
Thank you.
In response to Hamas attack, Israel has declared war and launched Operation Swords of Iron, striking around 500 Hamas and Islamic Jihad targets in Gaza so far and killing hundreds in the process. The Israel Defense Forces have urged civilians in Gaza to leave their neighborhoods for their safety as Israeli military operations continue to target Hamas. All crossings between Israel and Gaza have been closed. The U.S. deployed an aircraft carrier group to the Mediterranean in a bid to prevent a widening of the conflict. David DeRoche, associate professor at the U.S. National Defense University, discussed the situation with VOA senior analyst Mohammed El-Shenawi.
When you look at the amount of casualties compared to the size of Israel, this is far bigger than, say, 9/11 was for the United States. And, you know, unlike the 1973 war, this attack was both on, you know, the 1947 borders of Israel and was also directed primarily against Israeli civilians. The level of brutality seen resonates very, very strongly in the Israeli population and in the West in general. So I think that this is not going to be negotiated. It's going to be something that's pretty ugly, and it's going to go for a while. What the Israelis have done is they didn't say, you know, get out, because, you know, the question, which when I first heard that, I responded on Twitter, is like, get out to where? But what they've done is they've actually sent targeted messages in certain sectors of Gaza saying, if you live in this area, this area, this area, you need to go here. So they've basically telegraphed what areas they're going to operate in. And I think that their intention is to destroy everything within those areas.
U.S. deploys aircraft carrier group to the Mediterranean in bid to prevent escalation. Would that be a deterrent or a possible U.S. military involvement if other parties interfere?
Well, the possible U.S. involvement is the deterrent. I mean, a deterrent without a capability isn't really a deterrent. It's just a statement. So the deployment is not quite as big a deal as it seems. I mean, it was already in the carrier group was already in the Mediterranean, so it just moved a couple of hundred miles east. And it's pretty much standard procedure when you have an area that's important to U.S. security considerations with the conflict, that you want to have assets in the area in case things get out of control. The other possibility is if U.S. citizens need to be evacuated, having that capability there facilitates that. But there definitely is a deterrent capability given the amount there. And there's an outside chance that, you know, there's reports that some of the hostages being held by Hamas are American citizens. So there might be some direct action to free those hostages.
Israeli Minister of Defense Yoav Gallant said on Monday that he had ordered a complete siege on Gaza. No electricity, no food, no fuel, everything closed, he said, adding that no water will be delivered either. Would that cause an exodus of Palestinians from Gaza to Sinai?
I don't think so, because I don't think the Egyptians will let them in. I mean, this is a pretty brutal response, and it highlights the nature of the security dilemma and the nature of the how serious Israel takes this attack, because, you know, they know what this is. I think, you know, what you'll see is desperation among civilians. I think that the Israeli plan is probably to collect those civilians and the population under control and basically leave Gaza where the people who are not fighters are under some kind of Israeli control. The people who remain are militants, Hamas terrorists, so that they will separate them from the de facto human shields that Hamas has enjoyed in the past. The problem with this is the 120 so hostages being held by Hamas. And I don't know how Israel plans to deal with that. In the past, they have made very, very disproportionate prisoner exchanges. I don't know if they'll do that here, if they'll try to free some of them, or if they'll follow the approach that, for example, the Algerians say, you know, if you're taken hostage, we basically consider you dead. And they proceed that way as a disincentive for future hostage taking. So this is a really, really difficult, messy, ugly problem. And I don't know how Israel's going to react to it. And I'm very, very glad that I don't have to make these kinds of decisions.
Associate Professor David DeRoche speaking with VOA senior analyst Mohammed El-Shenawi. A distinguished scholar and former Egyptian Assistant Foreign Minister for Arab Affairs, Ambassador Abdelrahman Saladin, who is also talks about who led the end of. He says that a shift in focus by Western nations, which led to the end of apartheid in South Africa, could significantly help broker a lasting solution to the conflict between Israel and Hamas. He talks to VOA's Peter Clotty.
It's actually a tragedy in the process, and even more tragic events are coming our way. And it is going to impact not only the Palestinians under occupation in Gaza, but and Israelis who are living nearby, but also other countries in the region and maybe other international powers who might be dragged in this conflict. If we don't stop it, and if we don't make a quick diplomatic move to prevent more bloodshed.
Now, you are an ambassador, so and a scholar, and speaking on your own behalf as an analyst and as an interested party. But Egypt seemed to always try to play a neutral role. But in this case, what do you think Egypt can do to try to help resolve this impasse or this ongoing conflict?
Well, Egypt actually provides a very good example of how this conflict should be resolved, the Arab-Israeli conflict, because Egypt decided 50 years ago, coincidentally today, that the October War should be the last war between Arabs and Israelis. That was the case for Egypt and Israel, because we concluded our peace in 1979. And only through this peace, Israel felt secured vis-a-vis Egypt, and Egypt felt secured vis-a-vis Israel. So only through peace and only through the Egyptian-Israeli model, Israel can secure its people's safety, prosperity, and existence. No weapon is going to guarantee that, and no military superiority is going to guarantee that. And the recent events is a good proof to that. Regardless of who is committing the attacks, today it is Hamas, tomorrow it could be anyone else. So even eliminating Hamas and its fighters' forces is not going to solve it. And it's going to come at a very high cost. This is why I warn against a big military operation that would cost thousands of lives, of innocent lives, on both sides in this case, actually. So and the potential to drag in other countries in the region and other countries of outside the region, including the United States, by the way.
Abdurrahman Salahuddin speaking to VOA's Peter Cloti. And with that, we wrap up this edition of Africa News Tonight. Thanks for choosing The Voice of America.